Welcome to the Faith Element podcast for the November 7th, 2021 episode focusing on Mark 12, 38 through 44, The Widow's Mite. I'm Crystal Shepherd.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm David Adams.
Well, I'm back. I'm hosting again. Woohoo! In all seriousness, though, we do look forward to David being back next week. He is the best host, and so and I like it when he's hosting, so but I gladly will step in. We also have David Adams back with us this week, so you guys are in for a treat, and I am excited because it's November in this episode. It's not November when we're recording, but it's November. November is coming, and that is my favorite time of year. I love fall. Fall is the best. So I have to ask you all, do you like fall? And what is your favorite part of fall? I'll let you guys think. I'm going to tell you because I love fall so much. I love the leaves. I love the cooler weather. I love the fact that it's like, I love watching the leaves fall. I don't know what it is. And I think what it is, when I was a kid, my parents, every now and then we would take trips to the Smoky Mountains. And we have this one trip that we took when the leaves were changing and all those reds and yellows and oranges. I mean, like the whole mountainside was like on fire. And there's a picture of me in my favorite little zip-up hoodie as a kid. And I still remember having it. I remember standing in that spot and the feel of the air. So I just love fall. I love it so much. And it means that one of my favorite holiday is Christmas. So it means that's just right around the corner. So anything to do with fall, I love, except pumpkin spice lattes. And David will appreciate that when he hears it.
He will not appreciate that at all. He loves all things pumpkin spice.
He does.
Oh, I love fall too. It's my favorite season. And it's hard for me to choose what I love the most, but because of where I live here in Georgia, it gets so oppressively hot in the summer that I think really my favorite part is that things start to cool off and the air gets a little drier. And it's like you physically feel this relief from the summers that we have here, which can be so very, very miserable. So it's definitely the cool air, but I love all the colors. I love the rustling leaves. I feel like everybody has a little more energy when fall comes around. So yeah.
Now see, I love summer, always have, but, and not to be so superficial, what I love most about fall though, you just can't beat a good sweater. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Just, you know, when you, when that first day you're like, I need to put on a sweater, and you do, and it just makes you feel good.
It does.
I can't articulate why, but it does.
Yep. And a scarf.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. I like June. I'm a June person, not a fall person that much, but in the fall, you know, a lot of people don't know this about me, but I'm a very stylish person, and all the better clothes. Yeah, I knew they were going to laugh. But all the better clothes are fall clothes.
You're right.
You can dress better in the fall and feel good about it. You know,
I agree.
Sunday I'm wearing a suit. I almost never get to wear a suit when I'm preaching. You know, they say, "Hey, wear a shirt with a collar, you're good." But I can wear a suit this Sunday, and I won't be too hot. It'll be just right.
You know, nice.
So that's a good thing about fall. You can dress better. And by the way, many of the people who are our listeners are from the South, and so you all know something important about the fall, and that's football.
This is true.
We have to give you credit for that, because a lot of you are liking it because of the football.
Well, whether it's football or cooler weather, I hope you all are enjoying the beginning of fall. And David, could you get us started on today's episode?
Sure. One of the great parts about getting old is that you can reveal some secrets that you learned along the way. If people don't like it, they can just say that you're talking crazy. So in the spirit of sharing, here are some things that you need to know about ministry and money. I know that we tend to fall back to that great scripture that says a workman is entitled to his hire or some such thing, but money has always been a touchy subject. Now, when I was first starting in ministry, I struggled when people tried to slip me a little extra money here and there. Maybe it was a gratuity for performing a funeral or a wedding. Maybe it was a thank you gift for something I had done for them or their family. I've always had a hard time claiming charitable donations on my taxes, since it doesn't seem too charitable if you're planning on getting the money back somehow. Getting paid a little extra to do something that I'd do for free, because that's what real ministers are supposed to do, never sat well with me either. Eventually, though, I came to realize that there are people who have a need to give a tangible thank you for things. It's their way of dealing with the awkward fact that someone did something for them, and they just need to have that avenue of expression. In fact, many people feel that way. I came to realize that turning away gifts, even when people know I clearly don't seek them, cut them off from being able to get a sort of closure to the experience and a feeling that they were more fully participating in whatever we were doing. In trying to be ministerial and turn away a little something extra, I was actually depriving them of something they really needed at that moment. So I've learned to graciously accept things that are graciously given. Now, once when I was between churches, I spent a few years consulting and working with legal offices. It's a fascinating world of broken people and systems needing repair. Early on, the attorney whose office I use as a base taught me about his view of the profession and how there are three kinds of people in it. The first were what he called lawyers, who are people who are just looking to make money and found the legal profession to be a great avenue for doing so. These tend to be the kind of people who might give the profession a bad name since their primary motivation is profit. The second are what he called counselors, who are people who are sort of law geeks. They were fascinated by the workings of the legal system, much like any right-thinking person might follow college basketball. This fascination causes them to work long hours learning all they can and working the cases and laws and maneuverings that come with it. To them, a career in the law allows them to do what they love and get well paid for it. The fact that it might affect people's lives is a secondary consideration. Now, the third were what he called attorneys, who are people who earnestly seek to help others, using the law as a tool. Attorneys take the title Esquire or Shield Bearer seriously, since they view themselves as the shield for people who are otherwise broken or oppressed. They are quick to grasp that people generally don't go to a law office unless something in their life has gone wrong, and they seek to make it right. I really enjoyed working with those folks because they allowed me to provide pastoral care to their clients as a part of helping them rebuild their lives during or after a traumatic event, and integrity was a non-optional part of their process. All of this comes to mind when I think about Mark 12, 38 through 44. Jesus warns people against the kind of religious figures who are into it for the material and social rewards. These lawyers, which is another word for scribes, sought the best of everything and would gladly walk across the bodies of anyone who got in their way as they serviced their insatiable lust for worldly honors. They likely rode Maserati camels and ate at all the finest places while living in their fine houses and relaxing on their yachts during their days off. Well, sort of. We still have people like that today, of course. There are religious types out there who don't really seem to be into it for the people so much as the perks that come with it. We see no end to famous preachers whose ministries provide mansions, jets, exotic sports cars, yachts, or other trappings of wealth. One of my favorite bands from the 80s was a group called the Hooters, and they put this in a song where it says, "Hush, little baby, don't cry like that. God's going to buy you a Cadillac. He's chosen you to do his will, and you can spread the word in your Coupe de Ville. So jump in the river and learn to swim. God's going to wash away all your sins. And if at last you can't see the light, God's going to buy you a satellite." Of course, on a less egregious level, we have the same kind of folks in our churches. As a rule of thumb, I think that if somebody actively seeks to be seen as being specifically holy, rather than just tolerating that for the sake of others, they belong to this group. It doesn't have to always be about the money, after all. Sometimes it really is all about the narcissism instead. There are other scriptures where Jesus calls out people who are so into the law that they can't see that it affects real people. This passage takes us in a different direction by reminding us of a widow who gives all she has to the treasury. While everyone else seems to be giving so they can be seen giving, she gives because she truly believes and wants to help. She gives what she cannot afford to give because her faith is that great, and she needs to live into it. If you flip back to the first part of this passage, you can see why Jesus is warning us about these lawyers. You get the impression that they, like their modern-day equivalent, would have no problem with someone using their Social Security checks to fund their lifestyle. Taking the simple and sincere faith of widows and turning it into support for narcissistic missions is just not something that Jesus tells the reader to beware. He points out that they will receive a greater condemnation. And now it all comes down to money again. How can we be more like the simple widow and care so deeply for others that we risk neglecting our own needs? How can we be sure that those gifts that we are so willing to share from our hearts aren't used as fuel for things that Jesus would condemn? How can we continue to tolerate people whose ministry seems to be focused on personal honor rather than addressing the brokenness of our world? I don't know about the rest of you, but in my rush to join with Jesus in condemning those who hold back on their gifts or use their ministry to prop themselves up, I still have a lot of questions about myself. That's some thoughts about today.
David, I appreciate that Bible background. I'm fascinated by this widow who gives her two last coins, Jesus tells us, but I don't know why my mind goes here. I guess I'm wondering what was it about her that was so remarkable that Jesus took notice and used her as an example? Because if you think about all that was going on, the crowded temple, the people giving their gifts, she was utterly unremarkable, probably slipped in, slipped out, prayer shawl over her head. The very act of giving in these temples, you know, no checks or credit cards or even paper currency. You had coins, and so the more you put in, the more money it made, or the more money you put in, the more sound it made. People would turn to look, and so part of your gratification in giving was that people would notice you. Here's this utterly unremarkable person that slips in two coins that make no sound when they clang in the collection basin, but somehow Jesus says, that's it right there. It's just fascinating to me, the things that God notices, God cares for, which we just pass right on by. I don't know where I'm going with that, but that's one of the things I was thinking about as you were speaking.
Yeah, I think you brought out a great parallel too, because there's a passage where Jesus talks about how when you go to a banquet, don't sit at the head of the table, you know, sit at the end of the table. Well, this is sort of like that same thing playing out. The person who's sitting at the end of the table, not trying to get noticed, is the person who's ultimately elevated, you know, who does get the notice and who's held up as an example of the way we should be, as opposed to those people who are all trying to draw attention to themselves and live larger than the rest of us.
Yeah. And, you know, if this poor widow gave the last two coins that she has, I don't mean this disrespectfully to her. She may be poor, but she's not stupid. She knows those two little coins are not going to pay the temple bills for the week. It's not enough for, you know, music for the temple choir or whatever, or all of their massive needs. But still she says, I'm doing something. And incidentally, Jesus says she's doing more than the people with all the money. Mm-hmm. It makes me think about those folks who, even though they may have a little, they have pride and they want to help. They want to do their part and help pay their way. You know what I mean? There's something beautiful about it, not in saying, listen, lady, that's all you got. Keep those coins, take them home, take care of your family. When she's saying, we'll get by somehow, I want to give this to God. doesn't mean we take advantage of people in that situation. It does mean that we consider and be grateful for the cost at which that gift came.
Daniel, I like that you point that out about the widow. And I think that maybe also, and maybe this is what you were saying. So if I'm just restating what you were saying, but I think also that she understands that giving really isn't about the temple at all. And it's really not, yes, it's giving to God, but it's that discipline of generosity that she doesn't let go of no matter how much she has. And there's a discipline in setting things aside for holy things, for God, that is about how it changes and affects us, the giver. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so we talked to, maybe our podcast listeners won't get this as readily as those who study our printed or website curriculum, but we called this the widow's might, M-I-G-H-T, might. Mm-hmm. This woman is so strong and so challenging to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, my first thought was, well, I can't give all that I have, because what would happen?
Right.
Well, this widow, if she were standing in front of me, would say, yeah, Daniel, what would happen? What would happen if you didn't hold back and gave everything you are, gave your whole life to God? What would happen if you said, let me open my heart completely to the needs of other people? What would happen if you were more generous? My sense is, you know, I'd be okay then too.
Mm-hmm.
She challenges my fear, or my using fear as an excuse, that crutch. Because I don't know what happened to this woman after this story. Mm-hmm. Did she go home and starve, or did God provide for her? I think God provided for her. And that's a tremendous challenge to me and my own sense of needing to hold back rather than be all in with what God is calling us to do and be as people in this world.
I think there's sort of an action parable being played out here too. When you look at, pull back and look at the big picture, you know, here were people who were doing what they could to be noticed and feel great about themselves. And as Jesus is prone to say, well, you've already got your reward because you got the notice that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other person who Jesus also teaches about frequently, the person who doesn't do things for themselves, who doesn't get themselves rewarded and beat their chest and say how great they are. But God sees them and God rewards them. And in a way, this woman was rewarded. She got Jesus' attention. She had Jesus speaking well of her as opposed to saying that she deserved a condemnation of some sort.
Mm.
You know, she was the one who comes out the winner in this entire story as the person we should look up to and not the people we should be trying to avoid. And so in a very real physical way, it preaches the same thing Jesus is preaching, where he talks about rewards in heaven and getting God's notice and doing what's right and giving back what's right. It kind of puts a face to the story.
Daniel, as you were talking about what the widow challenges in you, I was trying to figure out how to put to words what she challenges in me. And all I can do is keep thinking about my grandmother. So it's my mom's mom, and she died about a year ago. But a few years before that, she was getting to the point where she needed to be in a home that could provide some assistance to her. And so I was helping my mom with all of that. And we were looking at what she had that she, you know, to put toward that, and what was she going to need? Was it going to be enough? Because she grew up very poor. And then a lot of her husband was a minister, and they didn't have a lot. And so she had a sum of money that we weren't sure was going to make it all the way to the end of her life. And so At first, we moved her. She was moved to a home in Auburn because that was close to some people she knew. But eventually, she moved up here to Atlanta, where I am, so that she could be a little closer to mom and her my mom's brother. And she made us find her a church where she could send her tithe, even though she wasn't going to be able to get out and go to this church all the time. And I just thought, why is she doing this? There's not much there to begin with. And the fascinating thing to me about all of it is that when she died, they had just enough money to take care of closing out her needs at the end. She had just enough. And I think my mom and brother had to put, you know, a couple hundred dollars in somewhere. That challenges me.
Yeah.
You know, as I, you know, think about my retirement and what am I putting away and am I going to be okay? Am I going to have enough? Is it? And then I think of my grandmother, and she was like the widows who gave the widow's mite. And she was probably one of the most faithful women I ever knew.
Mm. May her memory be a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my first thought when she said, I need to find a church I can send my tithe to, you know, that my first thought was, even now that we're studying this, I still, my first thought was, hang on to it.
Yes.
And I don't want to project, but I think you would have crushed her to say, no, Grandmama, you can't do that.
Yeah. My mom and I talked about it. Like,
yeah,
why does she do this? You know, but neither one of us, thank God, neither one of us felt compelled to tell her not to.
Yeah. That power.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
To be a force for good at a time when, again, I'm projecting, losing everything else, weak in many other ways, this is a place that she has strength.
Right.
Her own generosity. Yeah. And may her memory be a blessing. That's incredible. Mm. Sort of like what you were saying at the beginning, David, and I don't know if I'll get it exactly right, but when, you know, as a student in seminary, someone probably with not a lot of money said, you know, I know you got to buy your books coming up. You know, here's some, and you want to go, oh, don't give me your money, you know. But that would be to deprive someone of their living out their faithfulness by helping someone studying to be a minister.
Sometimes you have to provide those kinds of opportunities to truly minister to somebody. But going back to what comes right after that, you can't be taking it for granted or treat it as if you deserve it, like these people were.
Yeah.
And it's still tough when I have church members that, you know, want to have a gratuity that they want to give me for doing something. You know, and sometimes they get sneaky about it. Like I had somebody mail me a gift card recently because they knew I wouldn't take money. and I wasn't looking for anything. And they knew I couldn't take it back then, so they're going to stick me with the money anyway. Mm-hmm. But they needed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fine line because, of course, we, as much as we want to say, we don't show our appreciation to others with cash. But sometimes that's a way that people can express by saying, I would like to do something nice for you. And if I invited you to dinner, David, you'd turn me down. But so here's something and you can't say no.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that generous and beautiful spirit of it, it can be a way to bless someone at a time when we never would ask for it and we, you know, certainly don't deserve it. It's a beautiful way to allow someone to thank you. And sometimes, as hard as it is, you just need to accept the gift.
Well, David's talk about lawyers made me think of one of the most famous lawyers in all of literature, Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird. He exemplifies selfless service and seeking justice without recognition. And that created recognition in and of itself. One of my favorite scenes is after the court hearing has happened, and Scout and Jim are up in the balcony with all of the African Americans. He gets up to leave the courtroom, and one of the gentlemen says for Scout to stand up, her dad is passing by. And so it was that kind of recognition of like, he has done something, he has given every ounce of himself. It also made me think of what Atticus said, that you never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside of his skin and walk around in it. And today we attempted to climb inside the widow's skin to understand what it is to give. May we follow such examples as Nikki's grandmother, as Atticus Finch, and as the faithful widow that Jesus observed give all that she had. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.